Welcome to When They Popped. I'm Mary, and it feels so weird to be the person saying the intro. Kelsey is a real person and has things to do this morning, and so I thought I would hop on and finish our little recap of The Woman and Me solo. So I hope you don't get sick of me. I will try to be as brief as I think is possible with the revelations in this book. I'm in my closet with my pug. He is my co-host. Let's get back to where we left off, where Brittany was 5150'd again. She was lured to her beach house by Lynn, and just a SWAT team descended on her. And that's when we start to get into the conservatorship. And excuse a little rustling in the background. That is just my book and my notes. Brittany reveals that she learned that, and so she had been 5150'd a month prior, and that one big thing had changed during that time, and that was Jamie, her father's friendship with some Louise M. Taylor, Lou Taylor, whom, according to Brittany, he worshipped. And if you're listening to this podcast, you know all about who Louise M. Taylor is and what a freaking fraud she is. But Brittany says she was front and center during the implementation of the conservatorship that would later allow them to control and take over my career. Brittany, of course, has to roast her. She says, at that time, Lou had few real clients. She basically used my name and hard work to build her company. So Brittany kind of gives us the 411 on conservatorships and the legalese behind them. I don't know what you guys know, but I am a lawyer myself, but I learned so much about conservatorship law just from being exposed to Brittany's case. And there's basically conservatorship of the person and conservatorship of the estate. The estate is, you know, someone who's running your financials, and the person is someone who's literally running your bodily day-to-day decisions, something that many of us consider essential, you know, human rights to make those decisions. Again, typically reserved for people who have very, very, very limited capacity, not those who, you know, headline one of the biggest shows in Vegas, like the living legend herself. And Brittany was like, you know, obviously kind of explaining the financials of it. Her father, as her conservatorship, was making a bigger salary than she was. And she even seemingly accepted the conservatorship in that she asked the court to appoint someone else besides her father. Like she wasn't even saying, don't put me in. You know, a conservatorship of the estate, I can understand. It's the conservatorship of the person, which is really messed up, especially when you're not incapacitated. And she had such a, you know, Jamie has such an abusive history. And she's like, why would I want my abusive father in control of my person? And how does that make sense? And so, and then she mentioned Andrew Wallet, who was ultimately named the conservator of the estate with Jamie, who was making, you know, a solid $426,000 a year to, quote, keeping me from my own money. Like, she was on an allowance. She had to ask permission to buy things. Like, it was crazy. And she says, there were times when I needed my father over the years, and I reached out, and he wasn't there. But when it came time for him to be the conservator, of course he was on the case. He's always been about the money. And so she found out that she was placed in this conservatorship, or the paperwork was filed, while she was in the hospital for her involuntary 5150. And then, of course, the Spears family never seems to, like, surprise me or let me down with one-upping each other in awfulness. But Brittany says, as everything was falling apart for me, my mother was writing a memoir. Like, of course she was. I think that was, God, why am I blanking on her mom's memoir's name? But it's hard to find now. Don't buy it. Don't support it. But to promote the book, Lynn went on this whole, like, press circuit and, you know, talking about Brittany during these dark times. They would use imagery of Brittany during her meltdown, you know, quote unquote meltdown, if that's what we want to still call it. And Bernie goes, the book was huge for her and all at my expense. The timing was unfucking believable. She was on morning talk shows trying to sell her book about when I was in hospitals and being driven insane because I was separated from my babies for weeks and weeks on end. She was making money off that dark time. And Brittany actually references her current demeanor on Instagram. And she says, sometimes I talk trash on Instagram. People don't know why I have such anger towards my parents. But I think if they were in my shoes, they would understand. And girl, trust me, we understand. We are with you. We are with you on this one. So, again, as we mentioned, as I mentioned, we, Otis and I, the pug, conservatorships are typically reserved for these people that need them. They can't get out of bed. They can't have cognitive brain function. There's just, these are like the most restrictive options. There's least restriction. There's more like you can have a power of attorney. You can have just a conservator of the estate. Like there's much less restrictive options if the quote unquote incapacitation is less severe. Of course, they put that Brittany had dementia on the freaking forums, which we all know is bullshit and a lie. But that is how they kind of got this thing implemented. And I would assume greasing the palms of some people in the justice system. But so Brittany's like, if I was so, you know, dead, you know, brain dead, why was that? Why was it that a few weeks later they had me shoot an episode of How I Met Your Mother and then sent me on a grueling world tour? And that's the question we were all asking in the Free Brittany movement. Like, how does some, you know, I know a lot of people whose grandparents have had dementia. It's a terrible disease. It's sidelining. It affects so many people in the family. And it's like, but you know that person isn't capable of doing something that like Britney Spears was able to do. And so again, it's just, it doesn't cease to baffle the mind that this was something that passed, you know, all the check that was implemented. And so she goes, after the conservatorship started, my mom and my brother's girlfriend got short haircuts and went out to dinner drinking wine. Paparazzi were there taking their picture. It all felt set up. My dad took my boyfriend away, and she's talking about the paparazzo, Adnan Ghalib, and I could not drive. My mom and dad took my womanhood from me. It was a win-win. You know, just that's something I've noticed about this book. It's really, really hard, really sad how she just like felt that she lost this essential part of her through the abuse in our system, and that our system permitted. Obviously, I'm very impassioned about this, but she goes, I was too sick to choose my own boyfriend and yet somehow healthy enough to appear on sitcoms and morning shows and perform for thousands of people in a different part of the world every week. And Brittany even goes so far to tell us a little story about how cognitively with it she actually was. When her dad like officially took over as the conservator, there was like a study in her house and there was a little bowl there that had a bunch of receipts in it. And Brittany explained, here's my confession. I was so nerdy that I kept all my receipts in a bowl. Each week I would add up my expenses old school style to keep track of my deduction for taxes. Even when I was going through a wild spell, the fundamentals of who I was as a person were still there. To me, that bowl of receipts was proof that I was still capable of managing my affairs. I knew musicians who did heroin, got in fistfights, and threw TVs out the hotel windows. Not only didn't I steal anything or hurt anyone or do hard drugs, I was keeping track of my tax deductions. Not anymore. My father shoved aside my bowl of receipts, setting up his things on the bar that's in the study. He said, I just want to let you know. I call the shots. You sit right there in that chair and I'll tell you what goes on. I looked at him with a growing sense of horror. I'm Britney Spears now, he said. End of chapter. Like, holy shit. Again, like, we all know that he had this infamous quote of that I'm Britney Spears. And it just seems like he got off on that power. You know, real, real sick stuff. underlying message of this episode is like, this was some real sick stuff. So Brittany again didn't really go out this time during this time. That's why we weren't like seeing her out and about too much. But she says on the rare occasion that she did go out, get this. Like, so for example, if she went to a dinner party, her security team would have to sweep the house of the host of the party prior to her arrival. So how invasive and embarrassing is that? Like, to check for Tylenol, alcohol, drugs, like painkiller, like something like Advil. Like, how demeaning and embarrassing. Like, hey, this baby's coming over tonight and we need to make sure that you don't have any over-the-counter painkiller in your home. Oh, I just feel so much empathy that she was put through that humiliation. No one at the party was allowed to drink until I left. Like, they're like, you understand. You get why I'm sighing. Like, someone's hosting a dinner party and can't serve booze because Brittany's there. How does that make Brittany feel? Because she's so ill and sick. No, she's a cash cow. She was a cash cow. Anyone who Brittany wanted to date, a potential suitor, he would have to be subjected to a background test. He would have to sign an NDA, and he would even have to submit a blood test. So, you know, casual. And before the date, Robin Greenhill, who was Lou Taylor's right-hand little minion, we see her in a lot of pictures with Brittany kind of lurking, always kind of has her eyes on her, isn't far. And Brittany says that Robin would tell any potential suitor Brittany's medical and sexual history. And to be clear, this is before the first date. Like, okay, why does the date need to know who Brittany's had sex with? Like, that doesn't even, like, okay, if you make a man take a blood test or, you know, do an STD test or something, like, again, not really their place, but I at least can understand the logic in it, you know, but even the NDA, I completely, like, that, I feel like that's almost common practice, but, like, why does Brittany have to be humiliated on that end? You know, that's what I don't understand. Brittany also told us how she was ultimately denied due process and told that she couldn't get her own lawyer. And because her lawyer had to be court approved, so she had to stick with this court appointed lawyer, Sam Ingham. Ugh, what a bumbling, greedy mess. But much later, she said, I would find out that was bullshit. I didn't know for 13 years that I could have gotten my own lawyer. And as we could all tell, and Brittany knew herself, her court-appointed lawyer did not seem eager to help her understand what was going on or fight for her rights. I love this quote. My mother, who was best friends with the governor of Louisiana, could have put me on the phone with him, and he would have told me I could get my own lawyer, but she kept it a secret. Instead, she got a lawyer for herself, just so she could get off on fighting with my dad like she did when I was younger. Whew. I will say Lynn really gets it in this book, like feels the wrath. I knew they weren't good, and I knew Brittany's been roasting her on Instagram, but I almost, like, she really went hard on her. But it sounds like it was warranted, right? So Brittany then tells us kind of like what's sad and what I think any of us would be scared that we would feel at this time. And she said, and here's the sad, honest truth. After everything I had been through, I didn't have a lot of fight left in me. I was tired and I was scared too. I felt my spirit retreat and I went on autopilot. If I play along, surely they'll see how good I am and they will let me go. And this is the whole thing we get next of like Brittany trying to be good enough, like convince her dad she's good enough and she's not good enough for him. And it's just this real sad infantilization and like, on top of the complete and utter deprivation of human rights and destruction of a beautiful person's soul. It's really disheartening. She tells a story how Felicia was trying to work on circus tour, but like never in proximity with Brittany. And she later found out that Jamie wouldn't allow it and told Felicia that Brittany didn't want her working with her. And Brittany was like, I never said that. If I had known she wanted to do something for me, I never would have told her no. Without my knowledge, my father was keeping her from me, which is so heartbreaking because we all love Felicia so much. And we know how she's always had Brittany's best intentions at heart. But at any and every request just to do anything had to go through Jamie and Robin. They decided who she went with, where, and when. And get this. Under Robin's direction, security guards handed me prepackaged envelopes of meds and watched me take them. They put parental controls on my iPhone. I would go to sleep early, and then I would wake up and do what they told me again and again and again. It was like Groundhog Day. I did that for 13 years. 13 years. It's a wonder she's honestly still alive. It's honestly a wonder she's still alive. I don't think they would have, I don't know. I want to say I don't think they would have intentionally killed her, but like I do read that estate is more valuable in someone's death. So it's hard to speculate. Especially when she started kind of like striking and she didn't feel a passion in music anymore and wasn't putting her all into it, understandably. She could have been more valuable to them dead. She's probably right about that. But, you know, what Brittany said, she did it for her kids. Because she was playing by Jamie's rules, she was able to get time with her boys. And she talks about how, like, that first moment she had them back and she was able to, like, lay next to them and how that was really – sorry, Otis is scratching his chin. But that was really what kept her going. And kept her kind of playing along with this psychological and physical torture. My freedom in exchange for naps with my children is a trade I was willing to make. Ugh, she loves her boys so damn much. But again, so she brought them on circus tour and she was just trying to make Kevin happy and let this have him allow this to happen. She was paying his legal bills, child support, thousands a month, just so he would kind of permit them to come with them on the tour. She was appearing on all these shows, going through Europe and Australia and Asia. And again, in the back of her mind, she's always thinking, if I'm so sick and I can't make my own decisions, why is it okay for me to be out there smiling and waving and singing and dancing in a million time zones a week? She goes, I'll tell you one good reason. The circus tour grossed more than $130 million. Lou Taylor's company, TriStar, got 5%. My father got a percentage too. Plus, throughout the conservatorship, about $16,000 a month, more than he'd ever made before. He profited heavily from the conservatorship, becoming a multimillionaire. Oh, God, this is just screaming conflict of interest. I mean, we can all see this, right? Like, this is not someone who has his good intentions, his daughter's intentions in his heart. This is someone that has dollar signs in his eyes, right? So, over the time, this is 13 freaking years, over time, the fire inside me burned out. The light went out of my eyes. I know that my fans could see it, although they didn't understand the full scope of what had happened because I was so tightly controlled. And I agree with that. That was something I think we all noticed, you know, however deep you are in the fandom, the spark was gone and we could see it. And they took that from her. It's crazy. Like people always say, oh, like the spark's gone. She's not as a lot, like, you know, but I could literally see it in Brittany. And just to have that actually be visible, like how much do you have to go through for that to actually happen? She says, I became a robot, but just not a robot, a sort of child robot. I had been so infantilized that I was losing pieces of what made me feel like myself. The conservatorship stripped me of my womanhood, made me into a child. I became more of an entity than a person on stage. I had always felt music in my bones and my blood. They stole that from me. And I mean, damn, like, I get it. And just to make you hate Jamie even more, She said, I thought getting criticized about my body in the press was bad. It hurt me even more from my own father. He repeatedly told me I looked fat and I was going to have to do something about it. Like, we all fluctuate in our weight, and we all, I mean, as you get older, after you have babies, it's totally understandable that your body is going to be different. And I've never seen Britney Spears look fat, like, objectively. I've seen her body change as a mother and a woman, and as all of our bodies changes, as all of our bodies change. But, like, to hear that from your own father, not like, you know, a tabloid asshole, but your own father. I don't know. She talks about her relationship with Jason, Jason Trawick. He, you know, it seemed like they had a good relationship. For a while, she was very in love with him. But in 2012, excuse me, not in 2012, they eventually became engaged. But in 2012, he became her co-conservator. So think about this. You date someone for a few years, you get engaged, you know, you think you found a person that you love and that seems to be okay with this situation that you're in, you know, this very unique situation. Not only are you one of the biggest celebrities in the world, but you're basically have the rights and the abilities of someone under 18. And so you found someone that can accept these restraints on you as a person. And then after your engagement, you find out he is becoming your co-conservator of your person and your estate. What? He's in control of your bodily decisions. He's in control of your allowance and what you do with your money. What? Brittany says, I couldn't see it then, but I now see that having him tied up with the organization controlling my life might have played a part in draining the romance out of our relationship. Oh, yeah, that would have zapped it real fucking fast. There came a point when I realized I didn't have any bad feelings toward him. She's a bigger woman than me. But I also didn't love him anymore. I stopped sleeping in the same room with him. She said, he broke up with me, but I didn't care because I'd fallen out in love with him. He wrote me a long letter and then he disappeared. He resigned as my co-conservator when our relationship ended. As he should have, let's be real. She told this kind of funny story. I won't get too deep into the details because it's not, you know, that substantive. But the tours under the conservatorship were strictly sober, and so they weren't allowed to drink. But once she was out one night, you know, spending time with some of Christina Aguilera's dancers, and they actually met up with Christina in Los Angeles. All Britney said about Christina was that she seemed pretty messed up. LOL. She said, in some ways, they turned me into a teenager again. In other ways, I was a girl. But sometimes I just felt like a trapped adult woman who was pissed off all the time. This is what's hard to explain, how quickly I could vacillate between being a little girl and being a teenager and being a woman because of the way they had robbed me of my freedom. There was no way to behave like an adult since they wouldn't treat me like an adult, so I would regress and act like a little girl. But then my adult self would step back in. Only my world didn't allow me to be an adult. The woman in me was pushed down for a long time. And for me, that makes the title of her book, The Woman in Me, make more sense. She obviously has this woman in her that has been suppressed for so long, and now it's able to be out, you know, and this book is telling that story. And I kind of love the title now. At first, I didn't like it, and now it makes more sense to me. She pivots back to music. She says, back in the studio, I made one good song with Will.i.am. Hilarious, kind of a little dig. Work, bitch. But I wasn't making a lot of music that I was proud of, probably because I wasn't into it. And it's like, okay, we get it. Don't worry, girl. You don't have to explain to us. There's like, we're just happy you're alive, you know? We're just happy you're alive. So we get to the residency now. They pitch the residency. She's like, okay, you know, everyone goes to Vegas. Let's do it. And not that she had a choice when they pitched the residency, but it started in 2013, Christmas of 2013. And she said in the beginning, it was a great gig. She said the fans gave her so much energy. She became great at the show. She had so much confidence. And for a while, everything was good. And that was when she started dating TV producer Charlie Ebersole. And to Brittany, Charlie had marriage potential, was just a good guy. And, you know, he was very into fitness and he took, you know, pre-workout supplements, vitamins. And obviously, as couples do, he kind of shared his regimen with Brittany and she tried it and, oh, noticed she was more alive, more energized, more sharp and cognizant. And guess who didn't like that? Mr. Jamie Spears. And so he started to think she had a problem with over-the-counter energy supplements, an addiction. And I mean, this is, we're talking about something that you literally can go buy at your CVS, maybe like a pre-workout type thing. And Jamie Spears sent her to rehab over that. Rehab for a month. She couldn't see her boys for a month. This was like a real rehab. There were serious drug addicts. Brittany was like, I was scared. And one sick theme through all of this that we see is Jamie Spears' obsession and creepy desire to control Brittany and her body. She said, no matter how much I dieted and exercised, my father was always telling me I was fat. He put me on a strict diet. The irony was that we had a butler, an extravagance, and I would beg him for real food. Sir, I would plead, can you please sneak a hamburger or ice cream to me? Ma'am, I'm sorry, he would say. I have strict orders from your father. So for 2 years, I ate almost nothing but chicken and canned vegetables. And like, imagine just how much we take for granted as, you know, an adult in America. Like, we can put ourselves on a diet, sure. But at any time, we can break that diet. And imagine if you couldn't, though. And Brittany goes on to kind of talk about this obsession with her body. And she said, it was incredible to me that so many people felt so comfortable talking about my body. It had started when I was young. Whether it was strangers in the media or within my own family, people seemed to experience my body as public property, something they could police, control, criticize, or use as a weapon. My body was strong enough to carry two children and agile enough to execute every choreographed move perfectly on stage. And now here I was, having every calorie recorded so people could continue to get rich off her body. Like, that's sick. That is sick. And that's what her body was, you know, she was Miss American Dream. Like, and it was been literally since she was 17, as we hear on Piece of Me, probably a year earlier or so. But again, it's really sick and depressing if you think about it for too long. So don't. We talked about how she had that allowance. She was given $2,000 a week, despite the fact that she sold 248 shows and more than 900,000 tickets in her Vegas residency. You do the math on that. It's astronomical. She tells a really sad and dehumanizing story about one of the nights that she went out with her dancers. She tried to pick up the check for the whole party. It was $1,000 because the group was so big, but she had wanted to take them out. It was important to her that they knew how much she appreciated how hard they worked. And like, I mean, that's probably industry standard. She wanted to use her allowance money to do that. Like, think of how sweet and generous that is. But you see where this is going. Her purchase was declined. She didn't have enough money in her allowance account to cover it. Like, that sounds like something that would happen to me, like, in middle school or high school, you know? I don't know. But one thing she says, something that brought her solace during this time was when she was able to teach kids once a month at a dance studio in Vegas and in Los Angeles. That was kind of something that was a light in a dark time. In 2014, she said she decided to make a push to get out of this conservatorship. She cited, Jamie's abusiveness, his alcoholism, and requested that he be drug tested. But she just says the judge would not listen. And what followed, in her words, was a cloak and dagger effort to get my own lawyer. I even mentioned the conservatorship on a talk show in 2016, but somehow that part of the interview didn't make it on the air. How interesting. And then ultimately, this understandable feeling of being kind of suffocated and trapped led to her downfall with her relationship with Charlie. Like, of course, when you're going through something like this so traumatic in your personal life, of course, it's going to affect other aspects of your personal life. But then she had the opportunity to work with songwriters Julia Michaels and Justin Trattner, and they sat and wrote the album Glory together. And we know how much Britney loves Glory. And it just makes me kind of sad that it didn't get the recognition that it deserved. But she says writing this album gave her her confidence back. And when she was done, she played it for her sons. And Sean Preston was actually the one that came up with the title Glory. And it was in the Glory era that she first met Sam on the set of the videos for Slumber Party. And she said she knew she wanted him in her life immediately. They had insane chemistry in the beginning. And they started dating, you know, but guess what? Naughty Miss Britney Spears had started taking her over-the-counter energy supplements again. And Jamie Spears found out what, you know, how dare she? And he decided to show her some mercy this time around, if you can believe it. He didn't send her to the outpatient or inpatient rehab. He said she could do outpatient this time, but she had to do AA meetings 4 times a week. And Britney has spoken both in this book and in her testimony about how much connection she found at AA, how inspired she was by some of the friends she met there. And again, it's just these like simple things that she was deprived of that we wouldn't really think of, but are probably so hard to deal with, you know, for a long time and in the grand scheme. Like, for example, for these 4 AA meetings, she had to go to the same 4 every week. It was like scheduled. So like maybe her friends all had to go to a different one that week, but Britney couldn't change her schedule because her dad said no. Like, that's, again, it may seem little, but add that together with everything else, it's not. And it's just more control. I thought this quote was really interesting. She talked about her grueling schedule and, you know, how one of her hairdressers told her she needed to leave some time in there for herself, take some time for herself. The next day, the hairdresser was gone. Like, that is insane. And Britney goes on to say, as performers, we girls have our hair. That's the real thing guys want to see. They love to see the hair, the long hair move. They want you to thrash it. If your hair's moving, they can believe you're having a good time. In the most demoralizing moments of my Las Vegas residency, I wore tight wigs and I danced in a way where I wouldn't move a hair in my head. Everyone who was making money off me wanted me to move my hair, and I knew it. And so I did everything but that. So like this was just a way that she was able to exert her control and try to push back in probably the biggest way she could, the only way she could. And she said, by holding back on stage, I was trying to rebel in some way, even if I was the only one who thought that was happening. And so I didn't toss my hair or flirt. I did the moves and I sang the notes, but I didn't put the fire behind that. But I didn't put the fire behind it that I had in the past. Toning down my energy on stage was my own version of a factory slowdown. And like, I think some people made comments about, you know, her energy in Vegas, but like, that makes sense now, doesn't it? Like, okay, I'll put on your show, but I'm not going to give you the Britney Spears factor of it. She again goes back to Glory and just how it was bringing back this passion and spark for music, and it made her feel better about herself. Starting to awaken again. And she was tapping back into this connection between a performer and an audience. And I mean, it's like part of you is coming back alive that has been dead for so long. I mean, that must have been a great, just such an invigorating moment for her. She again mentioned her relationship with Sam was progressing and going well. And they even talked about, you know, getting ready to have a baby. And she's like, you know, I had so many doctor's appointments in the beginning of the conservatorship, and my dad made sure I was at every single one. But when I'm asked to make a doctor's appointment to get my IUD removed, he wouldn't let me go. So, you know, she talks about, you know, Black Box recording her. That's all in the documentary. I don't want to waste our time with things that have completely been discussed ad nauseum already. But I loved this line. Let's see. I don't know. Okay, we're not there yet. Oh, here we go. She was like, why the fuck? She started to wonder, you know, she had been so good. And she was like, why the fuck couldn't I sin in Sin City? You know, her dad was drinking every night. Her friends would come visit and go out without her. why the fuck couldn't I sin in Sin City? It's a fair question, Brittany Jean. Absolutely fair. But she said because of Glory, she was entering this, she was feeling invigorated. She was feeling alive. And she was trying to figure out how to wield whatever power she had. She referenced Reese Witherspoon as being an inspiration for that. And she said, if no one is used to you being assertive, they get very freaked out when you start speaking your mind. I felt myself turning into their worst fear with this newfound confidence she was getting. I was a queen now and starting to speak up. Yes, you are queen. I'm so glad she started feeling her, like seeing her worth. Again, something that Brittany does is she never like acknowledges how freaking iconic and a queen she is. And so any time that she recognizes that is a win for us. But so she talks about how the residency was due to end in December of 2017. And she was so freaking excited. She was sick of doing the same show over and over again. And she kept begging for a remix or new number, anything to break up the monotony. They wouldn't let her change her show. She did her same show for all those years over and over again. And we all love a remix. We love when, you know, we get a new version of a song or a different set list to like switch it up every year, you know, something like that. And as a creative and a performer, Brittany was dying for that. And they kept telling her no. She said, I was just there to perform for them and make them money. That'd be too much work for, you know, Jamie and team. And she goes, I cannot stress enough how mad I was. They wouldn't even let me change up my show. I wanted to remix my songs for my fans and give them something new and excited. When I wanted to perform my favorite songs like Change Your Mind or Get Naked, they wouldn't let me. It was so lazy, it was actually odd. I was worried what my fans might think of me. And I feel like she did get some criticism for that, because it's like, we were like, you know, it's been 4 years. Why won't you change your show? And look, this is why. Oh, my pug is snoring. This is why Jamie wouldn't let her change her show. And finally, she pushed and pushed and pushed, and they gave her a concession. And they said they could play one of her new songs, one of her Glory songs, in the background while she was doing like a quick change. Like, great. Thanks a lot, Dad. Thank you for playing a new song on the background while I'm changing. Like, oh, thank you so much. And then she talked about that infamous moment at the Radio Disney Icon Awards. Otis, wake up. It's okay. When she won the award, the Radio Disney Award, she won the Icon Award, and Jamie Lynn and a couple other, maybe like a couple other singers, I don't even know the girlies now, sang a medley of her songs. And she's like, I had so many feelings. By the time Jamie Lynn made a surprise appearance to do a bit of Till the World Ends and hand me my award, I was a ball of emotion. And so meanwhile, remember, she's just like been begging for years to do something like this with her own show, remix, mash some songs together. And she goes, I was furious. Here were three singers and my sister doing new arrangements, something I had begged for 13 years, having fun with my songs in ways I haven't in hundreds of performances. And I was sitting there having to smile. And let me say, that woman is a damn good actress, because she did look happy in that moment, in that clip, I feel like. But man, was she stewing inside, and I understand why. Now, Brittany reminds us, literally, the only thing that keeps her going in this time is her children. And we completely understand that. And apparently she would get two vacations every year with them. And the year Glory came out, she had to do a tour instead. And so she didn't get the vacation. So the following year, it was really important to her that she made sure that she got those vacations. And the team was like, yeah, you know, we might do like another show or two after Vegas ends, but then you can have the whole summer off, you know, to do whatever you want. She's like, great. And then by the time December 17, when the residency end rolled around, they were like, you know, sorry, you have to go tour in Vegas after the residency ends. And she was like, wait, what? Like, I thought I was going to have the summer off. And I guess someone on the team says, if you don't go on tour, you will end up in court because you have a contract. And Brittany says, you know, court is super triggering for her. And she definitely saw that as like a threat. Like, if you don't do this, we're going to take you back. You're going to end up back to court. And like, who knows what's going to happen? And you know how great court is and how well that's turned out for you in the past. And so she ended up having about 3 weeks off. And then she started to have to rehearse for her next Vegas show, which was going to be Domination. And she even mentioned that this tour that they made her go on was hellish, even worse than normal. They were very locked down by Jamie, her and the dancers. She said to even leave the room, they had to give the security team 2 hours notice. How is that sane? And she was like, you know, again, tried to, for this tour, tried to pitch a new version of this show. And Jamie would say no. And she was like, I couldn't understand why. And she says, but I soon realized that if I actually took control of my show, it could awaken people to the fact that I might not need my dad as a conservator. Isn't that interesting? We get a mini chapter about the Domination announcement, how she was supposed to show up and announce this new residency Domination. And she showed up and walked right past Mario Lopez and right back into her car and didn't announce anything. And obviously she told us that was intentional. And that was her way of being like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. It was Christmas time by then. Sorry, let me readjust myself here. It was Christmas time by then. Jamie told her that he was taking her kids, to Louisiana for Christmas. He said, the boys don't want to be with you this year. They're coming home to Louisiana with me and your mom, and that's that. Brittany was surprised, but what could she do? They were rehearsing for Domination, and we heard about this in the testimony that she gave. It hadn't been canceled yet, and she was working with her dancers and one of them showed a move for that was going to be incorporated in the show. And she winced when she saw it. It looked really challenging. She says, I don't want to do that one. It's too hard. And like, I'm five years older than I was before. When I first did the residency, my body changed. Like, it's not that bad if we change it up a little bit and make a move that's more achievable to me. Like, again, I think that's pretty normal for performers to adjust the difficulty of their show as they age. And apparently that just broke up rehearsals. Her team and the directors of the show disappeared from the room. She didn't really understand why or what happened, but the next day in therapy, she was confronted by her therapist, which is so bizarre. She's like, they found energy supplements in her purse again. She said that they think Brittany's doing these like terrible, even harder drugs behind their back. And she's like, what? And she's like, you're not doing well in rehearsals. You're giving everyone a hard time. And that's when she got the news that she had to go to a facility. And prior to her going, a doctor had to come run psychological tests on her. And so she says, a flashy doctor who I'd seen on TV and instinctively hated came to my house against my will, sat me down, and tested my cognitive abilities for hours. So then when the tests were over, Jamie told Brittany, she said you failed. Now you have to go to a mental health facility. There's something severely wrong with you, but don't worry. We found you a small rehab program in Beverly Hills. It will only cost you $60,000 a month. I underlined, there's something severely wrong with you. Like, are you kidding? There's nothing wrong with this woman, let alone nothing severely wrong with this woman. And Brittany's in tears. She's packing up her stuff. She's like, how long am I going for? He's like, maybe a month, maybe 2 months, maybe 3 months. It depends on how well you do and how well you demonstrate your capabilities. And Brittany had a moment. She said, and what if I don't go? My father said that if I didn't go, I'd have to go to court and that I'd be embarrassed. He said, we'll make you look like a fucking idiot. And trust me, you will not win. And they kept her locked in that facility against her will on her own. This was just her. This wasn't like a group thing for months. And, you know, I'm not going to get too into the specifics of, you know, what the facility was bad, as you would imagine. It was all this therapy, all of her blood, you know, she talks about her blood being taken and Groundhog Day. It was the constant surveillance. She said like she would watch TV in bed and be watched. She would shower and be watched. And what she said is, what I think did the most damage to me was watching all these people coming and going, the people who were providing her quote unquote care and treatment, while I was prevented from leaving, which, like, I completely understand. And she says, for years I've been on Prozac, but in that hospital or this facility, they took me abruptly off and put me on lithium, a dangerous drug that I did not want or need and that makes you completely slow and lethargic. I felt my concept of time morph and grew disoriented. On lithium, I didn't know where I was or even who I was. Like, we all know this. Like, being lithium is a freaking crazy drug for a very specific mental illness, and you're not supposed to be on it necessarily for an extended period of time unless prescribed correctly, which obviously she was not. And it can really fuck you up if you are incorrectly put on lithium. So she's in this solo facility for a while, and then they transfer her to one with other people, which had its pluses and minuses. At least she had other human interaction. But she said that the hardest part was that I believed that in front of the doctors or visitors, I had to pretend the whole time that I was okay. If I became flustered, it was taken as evidence that I wasn't improving. If I got upset and asserted myself, I was out of control and crazy. So here's that gaslighting again. And she said she, during this time, she called Jamie, tried to be like, let me out. And like, I'm done. I'm better. Like, please. And he's like, I can't do anything. You know, I can't do anything. It's up to the doctors. I can't help you at all. You know, the doctors have to clear you. And like a lawyer has like since come forward, like obviously been like, it was totally in Jamie's hands because he was her conservator. He can take her out of that care whenever he freaking wanted to. And he didn't. He was punishing her. And she also texted her sister, Jamie Lynn, when she was in that place and asked her to help get out. Jamie Lynn's response was, stop fighting it. There's nothing you can do about it, so stop fighting it. Brittany went on to say, this will sound crazy, but I'll say it again because it's the truth. I thought they were trying to kill me. And again, I wouldn't totally be surprised. But this really gave me hope, and this kind of passage, as Kelsey wanted me to note what part made me cry, and it's the end of this chapter. Several weeks into my stay, I was struggling to stay hopeful when one of the nurses, the only one who was real as hell, called me over to her computer. And she basically showed her videos of the Free Britney movement and its conception, the beginning, people in the streets, people in their shirts, people talking to news outlets. And she said she just couldn't believe the connection she had with her fans, how strong it was. And she said, everyone who spoke out for me or helped me survive that hard year and the work they did helped me win my freedom. And she said, the fact that my friends and my fans sensed what was happening and did all of that for me, that's a debt I can never repay. If you stood up for me when I couldn't stand up for myself from the bottom of my heart, thank you. And that's what got me, you guys. Kelsey, this is for you. I just remember being labeled by people as kind of crazy when I was passionately discussing Britney and where she was back in the day, wearing my Free Britney tie-dye shirt. And it just means a lot to know, not that I think I made a difference, but like our efforts as a whole kept her going and gave her strength. I also would like to mention, we don't get really mention of Sam in that chapter. And that's one of my biggest questions is like, what was he doing during this time? Like, he should have been her biggest advocate, but I digress. So Brittany finally got out of this facility, and guess who wanted to come visit her the first week she was back? Her family. So Jamie Lynn and her two daughters came to stay with Brittany in LA. And Brittany said, I was a shell of myself. I was still on lithium, which made my sense of time really hazy. And I was scared. It crossed my mind that they were only visiting to finish what they'd started a few months earlier to kill me for real. Imagine having that in your mind about your family. Imagine. And she said it was just so bizarre. Like, her family came in like nothing was wrong. Nothing happened. The last stay in the mental institution didn't happen. They're like, oh, how you doing? Jamie Lynn's like, hey, girl. You know, everybody's just like, Brittany is like shell-shocked. And everybody's just like, what's going on? And, you know, Jamie Lemche even talks about how she's like pitching sister talk shows to Britney, like, you know, just acting like insane, actual insane people. Who's the real insane person in this? Sorry, that's not in my place to diagnose. But then Britney tells us how in August we had the infamous incident where her father was arguing with her son, Sean Preston, and Sean went and locked himself in his room as an attempt to de-escalate the fight and the fight, and Jamie broke down the door and shook him. Kevin filed that police report, and her father could not see the kids anymore. And that was kind of another triggering factor. She was like, if I was strong enough to survive everything I survived, I could take a chance and ask for just a little bit more from God. I was going to ask with every bit of my motherfucking blood and skin for the end of the conservatorship. That was kind of a triggering, you know, I don't think she wanted Jamie losing access to impact her access. And, you know, her kids are her everything. And this is where I'm going to start kind of skimming over the end a little bit. She figured the first step that would help was to increase her social media presence. She was like, the first step to securing my freedom was for people to begin to understand and remember that I was a real person. And I knew I could do that by sharing more of my life on social media. And even though she said some people online thought it was so odd, I didn't care, you know, doing her modeling. She's like, when you've been sexualized your whole life, it feels good to be in complete control of the wardrobe and the camera. And that was her trying to get back in touch with her creativity, you know? And so we laugh at her, people laughed at her, and, you know, don't understand why she does those videos, but like, it's hard to understand what she went through and imagine how we would be when we went through something like that. And then she talks about COVID hitting and, for example, how that made even everything worse. One day she was at the beach and she took off her mask. Security ran over to scold her and she was reprimanded and grounded for weeks for being in an outdoor space at the beach, okay? She said because of scheduling and quarantines, Sam wasn't with her very much. She was so lonely that she was missing her family. Listen to this. She goes, I called my mom and I said, I want to see you guys. She said, we're shopping right now. Gotta go. We'll call you later. And they didn't. And because her family was in Louisiana, you know, that's a southern state, there were less restrictions. So Britney ended up going down there. She said, why did I keep talking to them? I'm not sure. Why do we ever stay in dysfunctional relationships? For one thing, I was still scared of them and I wanted to make nice. And she learned that when she had been locked up in the facility, they'd, you know, thrown away a lot of her stuff from her childhood home. Like, and she just said in that moment, I made peace with my family, by which I mean that I realized I never wanted to see them again. And I was at peace with that. Oh, she is a strong girl. So then in June of 2021, she called 911 to report Jamie for conservatorship abuse. And she said this was a really weird time because she didn't know what was going to happen. She still had to like not rock the boat, but like she just didn't know if it was going to go in her favor or if it didn't, like how punished she would be for something like that. And she mentioned that it felt like every day there was another documentary about me on yet another streaming service. And it's also when she found out that Jamie Lynn was coming out with her flop memoir, to quote Jesse's Girls, we love him. And she said, I was still under my father's control. I couldn't say anything to defend myself. I wanted to explode. She went on to talk about the documentaries and said, Seeing the documentaries about me was rough. I understand that everyone's heart was in the right place, but I was hurt that some old friends spoke to filmmakers without consulting me first. I didn't understand how they could talk about me behind my back like that. If it was me, I would have called my friend to see if it was okay if I talked about her. And what I gather is a lot of these friends allege that they tried to and they couldn't, or they were cut out, or they were threatened. And, you know, we don't know what the truth is or how hard people tried. I'd like to think Felicia tried as hard as she could. And these next chapters, you know, she recounts her testimony that, you know, changed the world, validated what a lot of us felt we were fighting for. And she talks about how she was able to get Matthew Rosengart and how much relief and peace he brought her through his work. And she talked about you know, some of the trips she's taken since she's been free, not really anything more than just the basic details, like nothing really new. And so that's why I'm not getting into them. She talked about her collaboration with Elton John. This is the thing. She said she recorded it, you know, before it came out, and right before it came out. And I had always heard the rumor that it was recorded in 2013. So I guess I was wrong, but she said it, putting out new music into the world was a fantastic experience. It didn't feel good. It felt great. You know, Elton John was one of her favorite artists of all time. It's an honor to be on a song with him. And at the end, she kind of reflects about her feelings of where she's headed next, her thoughts, you know, her positive thoughts about her fans, her negative thoughts about her family. Again, something I think that is better read, and a lot of it is, you know, the stories and details are, is nothing new. My feelings on this book, I thought it was really good. Again, I thought there could be some more details. Like, she didn't need to tell us the transcript of her testimony. We heard all of it. I mean, she told us that Sam was sitting with her, holding her hand when she did it. But like, you know, some of these things are things we know. But, you know, this, the woman in me, the woman in Brittany is out. And she doesn't owe us anything. And it's her time to tell her story and the way she wants to, and withhold and tell whatever she wants. And I'm just grateful we got this from her, because she did give us a lot of incredible nuggets. And I'm really proud of her. Yeah, she wrote with the ghostwriter, but so the fuck what? So does every celebrity. And I'm just really proud of her for reliving and going through some of these moments, which I'm sure was so traumatic, and getting it down for us. And we'd love to know your thoughts. I'm sorry for talking too much, and I'm sorry for Otis snoring in the background. I love you all. Thank you for listening. Bye. Read the woman in me.